All right, Ira, here he is, the head coach, Mr. Todd Bowles. Todd, thanks for joining us. Thanks for chatting with us before the podcast. And do you feel young when you're next to Ira? I do. We all do. Coach Arians used to. Do you feel young sitting here?
I feel older, actually, because Ira has been talking about his weight loss so much, and he makes me want to go ahead and work out more.
If you got any tips for the old guy, I mean, he could use it. You know, Jenny Craig.
Hey, I'm down 7 pounds. Come on now.
All right, Coach. that got me. That was a good one. Just going to your background, Coach, for fans who really don't know your playing background, a lot of younger fans listening to Ira, you were such a successful undrafted free agent. How does that help you today relate to players and motivate and just sort of be a better coach?
Well, it helps because you've been through it. You know, going into my senior year, I was supposed to be All-American and everything else, and I dislocated 6 out of 7 bones in my left wrist. And so when I came out, I went to the combine. At that time, I was in New Orleans, and I couldn't even do a push-up, nevertheless 225 on the bench press. And everybody said no one wanted a one-arm safety. I was never supposed to play again, they told me. But I was hard-headed. Even Bruce told me I shouldn't play again, and I couldn't play again. So after the draft came and went, I signed with Washington as an undrafted free agent. And the Philadelphia Inquirer did, at that time, camp was 5 or 6 weeks. They did a story on me every day from draft pick to free agent all the way up until the time I was supposed to get cut.
Because of the Temple?
Yes, yeah. Because of the Temple thing. So they came every day. I did an interview every day with the Philadelphia Inquirer. They printed a story every day. You know, figuring I'd get cut because I was a free agent. So I taped my wrist up. I went into camp, and at that time, it had to be at least 120 players in camp because there was about 6 or 7 free safeties. I don't know. I was 5 or something on the depth chart, and you had to make your plays via scout team or you get 1 or 2 shots, and that was about it. And as camp went on, you know, I just went to work every day. I said, I'm not going to quit, and I'm going to learn everything and do everything I have to do to try to make this team. And as camp went on, I ended up making the team, and I played nickel, actually, my first year. And the second year, I ended up starting the year we won the Super Bowl, and kind of the rest was history from there. And I think it helped me coaching-wise because at that time on our team, the free safety made every single call. He made the huddle call. He had to walk over to the coach during the timeouts. He made the adjustments. If the D lineman didn't stunt, it was the free safety's fault. If the backers didn't drop a certain way, it was the free safety's fault. So I kind of learned everybody's job, and it was kind of coaching while I was playing, so to speak. By my second, third year, I kind of had everybody down to a science. And, you know, it helped me a great deal. But Emmett Thomas, who was my defensive back coach, told me, when I finished playing, they wanted me to coach there.
Hall of Famer.
He said, if you coached right now, as soon as you were done playing, you would not be a good coach because you would teach them exactly what you know, and you wouldn't be able to see it from a coaching perspective, and you'd be pissed off at guys. He said, get out of the game at least 2 years, and then if you want to do it, you come back and do it. And I left. I got out for 2 years. I had a minority-owned construction company in Jersey, in White House, New Jersey, and I had a gym in Rockville, Maryland.
Wow.
Called Professional Fitness. And, you know, I did that for 2 years. I got away from ball, wanted no part of it. And Reggie McKenzie called me one day. He was in Green Bay. He was one of the scouts in Green Bay. Asked me, did I want to try interview to be a scout? And I said, there's no way I'm going to Green Bay. He said, no, you can be the East Coast scout. You can have everything on the East Coast. You just interview, you come up 2 weeks for training camp, and then you're on the East Coast the whole time from Vermont to Virginia, the end of Virginia. And I said, okay. So I took that job at the time. So I scouted. I went into scouting because I didn't know what I wanted to do, coaching or scouting. I said, let me start from the ground up. And Ron Wolf was the GM. They had Ted Thompson, and Dorsey was a scout. John Schneider was a scout. Scott McLuhan was a scout. Reggie McKenzie was a scout. Sammy Seale. Had a lot of guys that are now GMs. I'm the only dumb one that went into coaching. So. But it helped me, and I scouted on the road on the East Coast at the time. Doug Williams was scouting with Jacksonville, and he was the East Coast scout. When Doug got to Washington in 86, he came from the USFL. I came from college. So we got there at the same time. I was just fresh out of college. He was fresh off of being in Tampa and being in the USFL. He came in 86. He lived about 2 miles down the street from me. We became best friends, and he was in Jacksonville, and we saw every time each other on the road every time. And he said, "I'm going to get a head job at Morehouse. Would you like to come coach with me?" I said, "As what?" He said, "A defensive coordinator." I said, "You got to be kidding me." I said, "Doug, I hadn't even coached before. Why do you want me to be a coordinator?" I said, "You got 1,000 guys to choose from. Sure. You're Doug Williams." He said, "No, I watched you every day in practice, and you're the guy I want." So I turned him down. We went on the next trip. I saw Doug. He asked me again. He asked me about 5 times, and I finally accepted at Morehouse, and that's kind of how my career got started.
Todd, talk about, you know, it's a second chance for you. It doesn't happen very often with minorities. It doesn't. You know, Lovie Smith's maybe an exception. So, Todd, was there a point a year ago where you said, you know, thought to yourself, you told your wife, it ain't going to happen. I'm not going to get another shot at this. The Jets thing is always going to be on my resume, and then that's going to be my future. Do you feel blessed, or do you kind of feel like, hey, I've earned this shot. You know, I've worked for it.
I think I've worked for everything that I've ever had to do in my life. I never, the thing with the Jets, it was a very good experience, because I would not have known now what I knew then going into it the second time around. And, you know, as a head coach, I never coached to be a head coach. I coached to be the best coach, whether it was defensive coordinator, defensive back, linebackers, defense, anything. I coached to be the best coach. And if you're good enough at your craft, whether you like it or not, minority or anything else, there's only 32 of them. Whether it's a coordinator or a head job, there's only 32 of them, and there's a billion colleges and a billion other avenues to get into football. So you don't worry about it. You coach to be the best damn coach you can be. And when people see how you are, it's not even just coaching. It's how you are as a person, how you treat people in the building, how you come to work, how you leave work, and how you teach. And if you're the best at that, you may get overlooked, and that's okay. But you can live with yourself. But you don't sacrifice anything to become a head coach or become somebody to be seen. I don't do that to be seen. I do it because I love the game. I like to think I'm good at it from time to time, but you always work at it. And the game evolves. Everybody in every part of the game evolves, whether it's eye formation, run and shoot, zone read, RPO, spread. Every 3 to 5 years it evolves. So as defensive coordinators, and everyone says it's an offensive game, you have to start to tweak your system every 2.5 years, because when they catch up to you, you're done. So we try to do a good job as coaches, tweaking our system ahead of time while not losing the integrity we have with what we built, and go from there. And I always try to be a forward thinker that way. So we always learn new things and see new things and try new things to make sure that we're ahead of them. But for me saying I was trying to be a head coach, that's far from it. I think when you try, that's when it doesn't happen. When you just go about your business and do everything, you know, the good Lord looks upon you that way, and you kind of take it and run.
Coaching is coaching, Todd. I understand that, your approach and your principles, but you know this better than anybody. You get that title of head coach, it's different, and you know that, and you're embracing that now. Your responsibilities are different. You're everywhere. Talk about the difference when you get the head coach title.
It is different because you have to wear a lot of hats, you know, and you're in the media every day, and you better have thick skin. You know, I think going into New York, you kind of hear those things, but you don't know them until you actually go through them. You either embrace them or you fear them. I embrace them. At this point in my life, I embrace everything that I get, good, bad, and ugly, right or wrong. It comes with the territory. Nobody's going to feel sorry for you, but you have to do it your way and the way who you are. I have to do it the way I am. I will never be Bruce. I will never be Gruden. I will never be Dungy. I can only be me and try to coach the team the way I know how to coach the team. I know football. I know people. I know X's and O's. I know personnel. But to force yourself to do something like this and to force yourself upon everybody is not how it's going to work. There's a lot of ways to skin a cat. There's a lot of ways to win ball games. I just have to do it my way.
Your biography, that's some fascinating stuff. I'll get to one of them in a moment. I wanted to flush out a little bit. But Michael Lombardi, on his podcast, he's a really big fan of yours. Really big fan. I don't know how big of a fan, if he was a fan at all, of Bruce. He'd always like, Bruce, he's having a bourbon. But with you, he's very respectful. And he always said, hey, you know, they're playing the Bucks, you're playing Bulls. Look out. He's a good man, smart man. But he said a lot of times when a coach gets his second opportunity as a head coach, he's learned a lot from the first time, and he'll be even better coach. So he's really bullish on you with the Bucks. What are a couple things you learned with the Jets that, whether it be, I will never do that again, or I need to do X, Y, and Z?
I think one of the things I did, I tried to be good at everything. You know, I want to learn the whole offense. Mm. And learning the entire offense took me away from the defense, which is what I was brought there to do in the first place. I knew it like the back of my hand, but between learning the offense and taking media time and things happening, you don't get the film work that you really think you want to get time-wise to be part of the defense. And I think I hurt myself that way, and I hurt the organization and the team by not doing that.
And you're putting out fires, right, Todd?
You're putting out fires every day. You know that for a fact. You're putting out. As soon as I took the job, Coach Parcells told me that, you know, there are five things that's going to happen daily that you can never prepare for. Just treat them differently and treat them separately and go one thing at a time, and you'll be fine. If you lump them all together, then you're going to have a problem. And he was right. And he was right. You're putting out fires every day. So I think this time around, especially being here with all the coaching staff, you got to trust everybody to do their job. They're hired for a reason. Then if they don't do it, then there's a problem. You manage the coaches. And by manage, I don't mean control. I mean they understand what kind of message you want to send. They understand what kind of program you want to run. And you let them do their job, because it's too hard for you to try to manage 90 guys right now by yourself. And the message has to come from more than just the head coach. It has to come from the assistant coaches. It has to come from the people in the building. So you got to make everybody feel like they enjoy coming to work. You know, you got to treat everybody, whether it's the maintenance people, the cafeteria workers, everybody has to be treated the same, because they're all under you now. So you have that responsibility.
The element about Germany, you mentioned it, you played over there, obviously an exhibition game. What did you experience over there, or the travels or the customs, whatever, that you know that's going to be important for your team this year?
It's important for us. You know, I went over to London when I was with the Jets, and, you know, Jeff Fisher had helped me out with the travel at that time. I had never taken that trip. And I was looking at the trends of it. Everybody that left in the beginning of the week on Monday, that's when most of the trouble occurred. Also, that's when most of the burnout occurred, and they got their butts kicked on Saturday or Sunday. So, and it's a hassle with the sockets and the equipment and the plugs, because they're all different. No, they really are different, setting up the meeting rooms and everything else. So if you play Sunday and you travel all night after Sunday's game and you get there Monday morning, and they go to sleep, and coaches can't game plan, you, before you know it, you're Wednesday, you're at practice, and nothing's done, and everybody's tired. So rather than do that, you know, and Coach Fisher, you leave on Thursday night after you got all the preparation done. You get there Friday morning, you have a jog through. They sleep in and do what they got to do Saturday. You know, if they want to go to dinner or sightsee, play the game Sunday and come back. You know, it's a place. If it was a vacation spot, most of the guys would have been there already. We're going there for business. They make enough money where they can go back if they love the place, but we're there for business, and you try to manage. We had sleep people come in and tell us they had these red glasses for us to wear and everything else, trying to get all these things done before you leave. So, but it's really a mental thing and a toughness thing. You know, the sleep deprivation here and there, you got to catch up how you can, but you got to be ready to play on Sunday, so there's no excuses. But if we can get the prep work done here, we can go over there and we can bypass most of the things that will give us problems. So that's what we're going to do.
Coach, Carlton Davis said yesterday, that he doesn't know how to talk to you anymore. He looks at you differently now. He feels like, I don't want to say the wrong thing, be too casual. Coach is now the big guy, and I haven't figured it out yet. I assume that that's probably the same way for a lot of guys. Like, okay, he's the head coach now. We can't say what we used to say. And how do you deal with that, and what's that reality?
I think that's a Carlton problem. Everyone else says what they want to say, and I say what I normally say to him or anybody else. Carlton tries to be respectful, and he is. We have a great relationship. I don't talk to him any differently. I don't expect him to talk to me any differently. The hat has changed, but my personality and what I do has not. You know, the offensive guys are the ones that have to get used to me talking a lot of mess, and I can be very blunt at times and try to explain things, but I understand where I am. You don't get on them until you teach them everything and how you want it and how it's supposed to be. And once they understand that, yeah, we're going to have a big problem. But the guys have been working hard. And for the defensive guys, it's no different. For a lot of the offensive guys, it's no different because we talk. But, you know, it's just when you're somewhere for 3 years and you have the same people, coaches, and players, and then the leadership changes, there's an adjustment period because the voice sounds differently, the face looks differently, and the sudden tweaks, you'll start to try to be differently, whatever helps us win the ball game. But the messages are the same. It's just how you say them.
And pulling it back to football, a lot of fans, they want to hear, well, what does coach think of this guy, that guy? And I'm not going to ask you that because I know you're not going to say anything. So we'll just keep that straight. But Logan Ryan comes in. And the guys on your team and Bruce Arians, they've all called you a defensive genius, mad scientist, all kinds of adjectives. So you bring in Logan Ryan, and now finally there's competition at corner, and he becomes a piece that you can use a lot of different ways, and nobody knows how you're going to use him. How does that feel to have a guy like that in there? Now you have four cornerbacks who are at a certain level, and everybody's sort of looking around wondering how they're going to be used.
I'll tell you what, he gained my respect. As soon as he got here, he wanted to watch film, and he had been watching film on us, and he's been here every day, phase one, phase two, OTAs, and mini camp, and he picked it up seamlessly. Obviously, he's been in some very good defenses before, and he knows how to disguise and talk to guys. Not only does he pick it up, he's a good leader and mentor for the other guys. I mean, he'll keep the safeties after practice some. They'll walk through some things. He gets it. You know, he gets it. It's not just his mental. He can play. He actually can play nickel and safety. And if we need him at corner, we can play him at corner. So he's a good chess piece, not just to move around, but from a mental aspect. He's a coach on the field. He's more vocal than we're used to having back there, which is a great thing. I think Keanu Neal is as well. So we just look forward to him getting the system down and understanding the tweaks. And you know, he's a very smart football player. It's the reason he lasted 10 years in this league, because he's very smart, he's very tough, he takes care of his body, and he's a good model for other players, especially DBs, to follow when he comes in the building, because he understands how to watch film, and I think that's the biggest thing young guys don't know how to do.
Todd, I told you that when you got the announcement of the job, Vrabel told me during the NFL meetings, because I asked him a question about Ryan, he goes, he wore me out. He's in my office every day asking, why are we doing it like that? But he respected him because the guy was so knowledgeable. So he wasn't some slappy, you know, questioning what the hell they're doing. But he said that about Ryan. He wore me out. So get ready, Mr.
I'm fine with it. I like questions. I like guys that are in tune with it and understand the game plan, the how, what, whys, and wheres. And we take advice from anybody as coaches. You know, if somebody has something that's great, we'll use it. If not, we'll tell you why we won't use it, and we go from there.
Todd, let's talk about 45, sort of the tone setter, Devin White, on defense. And here's what I mean, Todd. He was so dynamic during the championship run. He was unbelievable during those playoff games, all of them. That pick against the Saints when he said, I'm going to turn this game around, and then he did. And Todd, obviously, he didn't have a bad year in 2021, but the splash plays, fans say, well, where's the dynamism from White taking that next step up? What kind of year did Devin White have, and how did you use him last year? How are you going to use him this year?
I think he had a good year. I don't think he had the Super Bowl year, but he still had a very good year. I think we had a lot of injuries that ravaged that. We asked him to be more of a vocal leader as far as pointing and lining people up more than we did making plays to hide up some of the weaknesses that we had. He still had a very good year. In the second year, you become better mentally. I think there was a cross between his mental and his physical play. And then he started hearing the noise, trying to make a play. That's when he would make a mistake. I think he's aged and matured a year. He's come back with a great mental approach to the ball game. He's gotten a lot better at almost everything that was almost a minus for him last year. But he is our tone setter. He's one of those guys that you have to let be a football player. I'm not saying he's Ray Lewis or Mike Singletary, but he's one of those guys – that's very confident in his ability, and he's very good at what he does, and you have to let him play. And I think we're getting back to that more, letting him play, but understanding where he has to be at certain times. So I think his best years are ahead of him. I think it's impossible to ask an inside backer to have 9 sacks every year.
I agree.
That's not realistic. He got through and had some success at that, and we had a lot of guys up front that helped out with that. But if he can get 4 or 5 sacks and get about 3 or 4 interceptions, that's a great year to me, as well as doing things, helping us win, making some third and short stops, and leading the defense and being where he needs to be mentally. And we've tweaked some things for him that fit his game a lot better. You know, we have to be smarter as coaches, getting him in better positions too. But he, like you said, he's the guy that we turn to. And he's a natural-born leader. It's not for show. I mean, he does it in practice every day. So on Sunday, it's just a microcosm of what we see every day during the week.
Now, Todd, I'm going to generate a little frown here, because I'm going to mention a word that you're not happy with. I don't think you're happy with. And it's not a specific player, although White's part of it, because he's a defensive leader. Tackling, Todd. You've talked about it throughout last season, a little bit the year before. What's going on there? Is it poor angles? Is it as bad as some Buck fans are screaming about? Is it erratic? What's your feelings about the tackling overall?
Overall, I thought it was average. I thought we can get a lot better tackling. We weren't very good, especially in the second half of the season. Some games I thought it was terrible. And if you look at it, the ball's not going over our heads. When we give up 300-yard games, we give up a 5-yard check down that turns into a 15-yard play, or a 2-yard pass that turns into a 12-yard play.
And they accumulate.
Or vice versa, and they accumulate. And you think the guys are killing us down the field, and they're not. These are check downs, and we got to tackle better. Our angles have got to be better. Part of it is just discipline, for the most part, is discipline. You're not in pads as much anymore. You got to either tackle donuts or dummies or those type of things, but it's got to be an emphasis on tackling. We need more guys swarming to the football to help out with the tackling. I thought we dropped our heads way too much last year, and without saying particular names, I thought we dropped our heads at times, and I thought we missed tackles, and that is the biggest pet peeve of mine, tackling.
You know, Todd, Ryan and Neil, to an extent, can be contributors.
They've been
in that regard.
They've been very good tacklers in their career, and hopefully that helps us, and we can't wait to get them in there.
This is a great subject. You're singing my song here, Wayne. Here you want to have better tackling. I this is both a sore subject and a great subject for me. You know, I don't want to out the guy, but he's an ex-quarterback, ex-NFL quarterback. He has a national radio show. He thinks tackling overall in the NFL has deteriorated. And he tried to say the lack of wrapping up is on purpose. Players don't like to wrap up because it creates shoulder injuries. Is that guy full of it, or is there something to it?
No, I think if you tackle the wrong way, it creates shoulder injuries. Right now, the tackling is, you know, you can't go high because mm-hmm. you can't go above the neck. Now it's almost to the point where you can't go low, and you're trying to find the perfect form tackle. I think you just have to play football. You want to tackle the right way. And 90% of tackling is wanting to, and then the rest of it is technique. You know, if you have your leverage and your feet under you, you're going to make a tackle. You know, we have to understand when we can hit people and when we have to just get them to the ground. As a safety, you know, if a guy pops through the hole scot-free and he's running full speed at you and you're flat-footed and he already has the first down, 3 or 4 extra yards isn't going to hurt, so you're not going to make the big hit. Just get him down so we can line up and live the next play. You're not going to go up to him and blow him up, so to speak. Yeah. You know, I think it was my second year, we played Dallas, and Herschel Walker popped through the hole so quick, and I was standing there flat-footed. I said, "You got to be kidding me." And I knew he was going to run me over, but in the process, I knew I could grab his legs in the midst of him trampling me, but I got him down. That's the biggest thing you have to do, is get him down. So we have to know when to get people down and when we can hit people. But the biggest thing is we got to react quicker, and we got to go there with the intent of having that guy get down no matter what it costs.
I got an Akeem Hicks story for you. I just want your feedback on this, your reactions. Earlier this week when he spoke, he said something I thought was really cool. He was asked about the defense, his new teammates, what he thinks about him. And I thought this was very insightful. He said, I heard a lot of chirping. And he says, usually when there's chirping, players are getting on each other. But they were receiving the chirping. They were listening. It was like guys wanted their teammates to be better, and those teammates were listening to what the other guy was saying. And he said, that's generally a sign of a winning culture.
So it wasn't a negative type of situation.
No, we talk a lot. You know, a lot of it led by Nacho at times. Devin can talk and get pretty chirpy. Some of the coaches as well. Mike will have his say. Evan's on offense. And Tom can get going. It's really just competing against each other. We know we're competing, but at the same time, we're all teammates. Mm-hmm. So you have, there's a lot of talking on Sundays. There's a lot of talking on Sundays. And the biggest thing is, when we get out of it, can you talk and still play your game at the same time? If you can't, shut the hell up and don't say nothing and just do your job. If you can, it helps the other guys too. You know, we don't condone it, but we're not against it either. We like to have confident players. We want to let them be themselves out there on the field, but they have to understand that we're on the same team, and they do that. It's not personal.
Even Brooks told me he talked a lot of trash. Derek Brooks with that, you know, reputation, Todd. But he backed it up, Todd.
That's the biggest thing. You have to back it up.
Coach Akeem Hicks, you said the other day, I had to rewind it three times. So I was like, Todd Bowles said he's going to play a lot. We expect him to do what he did in Chicago. And what seemed like a big statement, you didn't say, hey, he's got to fit in and learn the system. So has he been a player you've been looking at for years? Do you have a history with him? Maybe you scouted him. Maybe you always had an eye on him. What's the backstory there?
He's a guy that I've watched on Sundays, you know, when the Bears were on TV. Every time I see him, he's been in the backfield. You know, you watch certain games and he's making plays in the backfield. He's not just a big guy. He can move, and he's highly intelligent for a defensive lineman that knows as far as understanding pass rush technique and how the guy's going to go down and block and how he can get his hands up under his wrist. And he can do a lot of things that way. But when I got fired from the Jets and I was debating whether to come down here or go to Chicago, you know, they had a couple of guys from the Bears called me and tried to get me to go to Chicago. So, you know, I had a brief encounter there, but it wasn't long. And I've always been a fan of his. And, you know, he kind of fits everything that we want in a defensive lineman. He's big. He can get off the ball. He can move. He plays with a mean streak. And, you know, we expect that coming from him right here. As far as how much he's going to play, you know, we're going to keep our guys pretty fresh. As a D lineman, you want to have two group rotations. You don't know if you're going to get no huddle, if you're going to have a long drive. Those guys can't stay in there like DBs, but he's going to play for us, and he's going to play a lot.
Bruce Arians always used to say, I don't want to coach the coaches anymore. That's why I came back, because I know all my guys are coming back. I don't want to have meetings. I don't want to coach coaches, train them. What's your stance on coaching coaches as you look toward the future of being in this job, hopefully 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years? Do you have a different view, and are you starting to plant those seeds of beyond this year, or are you just all about this year?
No, you always try to plant it beyond this year. I was a young coach once, and I had a lot of guys that helped mentor me. You always want to help coaches get better. You always want to try to help them be leaders and stand in front of the room. I don't want to be the only voice in front of the room. I want to be the main voice. Obviously, the cue comes from me, but at the same time, you understand coaches, certain techniques they do, what they can get better at, what they're not good at, and you try to help them that way when you can. Sometimes it's just a simple comment saying, you know, this guy, he looks better over here when he does this, this, and this, and then you get the comment from him, and you try to help him out that way. Other guys you talk to, and you get your message across, but you still have to, like I said, we've been together 3 years. All of these guys have confidence and all great coaches. And you've probably got potentially 4 or 5 more head coaches on this staff, you know, if given the opportunity. But you coach the coaches really for your message, for your message. If you can get your message across to the coaches, they're in the rooms with these guys every day. Individually and collectively as groups, they're in the room with these guys every day. If you coach your coaches and the message is coming from the top down from everybody and you're all on one accord, you don't have a problem.
I'm always trying to coach Ira, but he never listens. But
Todd, last two from me, my friend. Thanks so much for doing this. We won't see you till training camp, which is going to be what date for reporting?
July 20th.
July 20th? He said you
got to
have
reporting.
You got to have
for
6 weeks.
The vets will be for 23rd. 26.
Brady mentioned the 23rd.
Yes. So, I'm talking about for coaches to be back in the office.
But what about reporting day for players?
26 is the players, 23rd is quarterbacks.
What do you want, a physical, Ira? What is this?
Now, Todd, I'm going to tell you up front, and you know this. This is a pet peeve of mine.
So many.
It's sensitive, I know, from your standpoint, but, like, I'm going to say, like, Blaine Gabbert, ? I mean, it drives me crazy, Todd, because Arians used to talk about him like he's Johnny Unitas, and I would say to Isbitz, well, am I missing something here? Look, Todd, you see him in practice every day, and we don't. And he's only a backup. He's not your starting quarterback. I understand that. But what do you see from Blaine Gabbert, and how comfortable are you with Blaine Gabbert?
I'm comfortable with Blaine. We talk a lot. You know, we've gotten to know each other over the past couple of years. He knows this offense very well. He understands the offense very well. He knows where to go with the football because he's been in it. You know, that gives him the edge over Trask. That's not to say Trask cannot catch him, okay? He gets the nod because of experience. Kyle's going to get plenty of practice to get better. It's how much better Kyle can get while Blaine is still the backup, and how much can he close the gap, if not take it over. But I like Blaine. Tom's our starter. Don't get me wrong. Tom's our starter. Blaine's seen a lot. He's been in about 10 years. He's seen a lot, and he should. You know, most
maybe
guys,
he's been in some tough situations.
He probably has been in some tough situations, and you just never know until a guy's in there full time. He came in Detroit a little while ago, maybe 2 years ago, threw the ball around a little bit, and he knows what to do, and he's not going to panic when he gets in the game. So he's like a security blanket right now. But like you said, anybody that's a backup will have competition, and even the starters, certain starters.
So, Todd, you feel if Brady tweaks an ankle for 3 or 4 games, you can win with Blaine Gabbert?
Yes.
Okay. Last one from me, Todd. This is a phrase you use all the time, situational football. Critical. Late in the first half, timeouts, challenging with the flag, things like that. Todd, what do you take from your 4 years with the Jets in terms of situational football? I did this right, I did that wrong, and you can apply it to Tampa. How do you handle those situations?
I think some of the situations early on, like if you go into an opponent's stadium and there's a situation for a replay review and they're hurrying up and get to the ball, they don't show it in your box, so you're kind of naked out there. And sometimes you do it just to slow it down, just to make it sure it's 50-50 and you have a shot at winning it, just so the team doesn't get a playoff and they get a 40-yard play that should be called back. But you handle situations differently every game. We use analytics, but I'm not going to say if they stone me on 2 4th-and-1s when it comes to the 3rd 4th-and-1, if the game's not on the line, I'm probably going to punt. Now, if we're running the ball for 200 yards or 40 yards a clip,
well,
and the defense is playing well, yeah, we're going to hit it and go. So every situation is different, but you got to have analytics, but yet you got to have a feel for your team and the game that's going on.
You feel you progressed during your years with the Jets in those situations?
I think I got a chance to step back and look at everything and understand everything that's going to happen before it happens. Before, when you're a first-time guy, you're going to experience some things that's never happened. You want to prepare for them, and you say you're prepared for them, but one or two things are going to happen that you probably say, I want to have that back. So this time around, I think I have a very good grasp of seeing situations, a lot of them before they happen, mostly all of them, probably because of age and, you know, some intelligence comes with age as far as making mistakes, so I think I have a better grasp at that.
All right, I just have one question to wrap up. Now, obviously, if you have Brady, everything's going to be okay. You got Brady. He's one of the best ever played, so things aren't going to collapse as long as he's on 2 feet. However, what are you looking for in your team? If they do X, you know, whatever that is, you're going to say, you know, I think we'll be all right. I think we'll be good by the time we come to February. What is that one thing that you're looking for from this team? And if they reach that, you're going to be, all right, we're in good shape.
I think if everyone gets to the mindset of we need to make Tom's job easier, not him make our job easier, we'll be a better team. If we don't have to rely on the heroics, so to speak, and everybody's doing their job and earning their keep, will be a better team.
Like the Jets game, you know.
Yes. Yeah, you know, there was a few games that we shouldn't even been in. If we take care of our business that way, more of a team-like thing, we'll be a better team.
Well, that was an awesome answer, Todd. We could obviously sit here for an hour, but you've been fantastic. Appreciate you doing this. Not even a drink of water. How do you pull that off? That was fantastic. Unbelievable. I got to close with one thing because I thought it was really cool at your opening news conference. And I'm hoping maybe you could expand on it a little bit just as a leader. You said, I think it was a closing, and I'm paraphrasing, that when you're up on the podium or talking to the media in general, you view it as if you're talking to your kids. And you carry yourself as if I'm talking to my children. And I took that as, you know, hey, I got to act a certain way and be the right person for my kids, the community, for all these fans, for everybody, and, you know, put a certain person out there. And I was hoping maybe you could explain that a little bit.
Really, it's just being a dad. You know, your kids look up to you certain ways, so you want to represent your family in a certain way while answering the questions, while you're really talking to them, because mine are all teenagers. I'm now 20, 19, 17, and 11, and I got three boys, and they watch everything. So they're going to look, they get the goofy, funny stuff at home. You know, they get the serious stuff. They get the disciplined stuff at home, but they don't get to see me do my job, so to speak, because they're not at practice every day. Unfortunately, they follow football and follow me because, you know, it's because it's my job. So you try to teach them to handle themselves the right way when they're speaking out in public to anyone. And it's a good and a bad thing. They understand the mental toughness that comes with it. Obviously, if you lose ball games, you got to go to school. Some kids are cruel. They understand that part of it. They understand playing football or even carrying the last name, so to speak. But you teach them pride through everything else and work ethic and determination. And no matter what, you're going to get up the next day and you got to be better than you were the day before. So I always try to stand up and let them be straightforward when they're answering questions and look people in the eye and give them an honest answer. And, you know, pretty much, barring, I don't really talk about injuries or I don't talk about game plan, but right, I'll pretty much answer any other question you have to ask me honestly, you know. So, you know, trying to teach them that part of it.
I know I already promised the last one, but what's a better chance of happening? Your kids watching Tom Brady get his hair dyed red, or your kids at the dinner table talking about Ira asking Brady about Arians?
It's going to be
that. Having Tom Brady get his hair dyed red.
I needled Ira about that already. I needled him about that.
Todd, you're going to bring the boys out to training camp at all?
Well, one of my sons is a freshman at Rutgers. He's a safety. He went last year. He redshirted. My other one, the linebacker at Jesuit, he'll come out as long as they're not at practice, obviously. So he's an 11-year-old. He's not really a football guy.
Tom's met the boy.
He's met both of them.
All right. Well, thanks, Coach. We appreciate it so much here on the Ira Kaufman Podcast. Any final motivational tips for Ira in his weight loss journey? He's up and down. We can't motivate him.
I say this, Lee. Big Storm Beer.
That's outstanding, Todd. That's outstanding.
Awesome. Thanks, Coach.